I'm an addict named Bill.
And
I spent a lot of time thinking about what I was going to say today and promptly forgot it all. But I was thinking about something while I was driving up here. It was about the first time I ever came to this convention center, which was long before I got clean. And this is what I remember about my first trip to this convention center. I'm lucky and blessed to have the opportunity to be a performer. I get to play music. And people pay me for it, which never ceases to amaze me. And I came up here to play a performance, and the two things I remember about this performance were that it was for the Maryland National Capital Park and Planning Commission, and there was a woman there who said she knew me from, I think, from college. Other than that, I was in a blackout. I was wasted. I was just out of it. That would be a really good example of not living the program. When I came here, I was resigned to a life of regular psychotic episodes. It's not just that it happened, I had come to accept that this is the way that my life was going to be, that I was going to be psychotic on a regular basis. They were all out to get me, and that was just the hand I'd been dealt, and I'd better get used to it because it wasn't going to get any better than that. I am grateful that some of the drugs I used kept me up really late at night into the early morning, and because of that, I happened to catch a Narcotics Anonymous public service announcement commercial. They run them at like, back then, at least, they ran them about 2 or 3 in the morning, which is perfect time. Yeah. You know, when we're all like, you know, we're all really sketchy and freaked out, you know. And we can't stay awake and we can't go to bed and, you know, and we're pulling down the blinds and just so that nobody can look in, you know, that whole thing. And I'd like to say that I saw that and a light went off. And I went, oh, this is what I've been looking for. But I actually used for another 3 or 4 years after that. I'm a slow learner. I always have been. But when I was ready, I remembered that commercial, and I looked up Narcotics Anonymous in the white pages. And back then, they had a helpline that was manned by a live person, not an addict, but just somebody with a meeting list in front of them. And they would tell you where to go to a meeting. They'd ask you where you're from, where you lived, so they could get an idea of something close by. And I got clean on a Thursday, and I called. And the woman told me where there was a meeting that night. And I there's a whole lot about my early recovery that I don't remember, but I sure remember this. I remember telling her, oh, I can't go tonight. I'm too busy. Uh-oh. And for the life of me, I've spent the last 18 years trying to remember what I was so damn busy with, and I can't remember what it was. But that's the truth. And I said, I think I can fit one in on Saturday night. So I think it's proof that I was ready and my higher power wanted me to be here, that I didn't use for those 2 days. I stayed clean on Thursday and Friday, and I went to a meeting on Saturday. At that first meeting, I heard half my story. That was real powerful for me. And I heard a guy talk about looking in the mirror and telling his reflection that he loved him. And that was something I didn't get, because when I looked at my reflection in the mirror, I saw emptiness, and I had to decide like what character I was going to play for the day, because there was no real me that I was aware of. So it was, you know, what am I? I'm going to be a funny guy today. Am I going to be a bastard today? What am I going to do today? How am I going to interact with the world? Because I had no real way of doing it. I had no knowledge of who I was. So when I heard him say that, I realized that people in here had something that I wanted. I wasn't really sure what it was. And I got to tell you, I did not trust Narcotics Anonymous when I got here. As you know, it was too touchy-feely.
Okay.
Too many people smiling and laughing about stuff that you're not supposed to smile and laugh about. And I was very frightened. I was very frightened when I got here. My first meeting was at a place called the Shady Grove Hospital Center up in Gaithersburg, Maryland. And I remember I took all of my drug paraphernalia. and I cleaned it off real carefully so there were no fingerprints on it. Then I put it in a box, and I only handled the box like with like paper towels,
right,
so there wouldn't be any fingerprints on the box. And I took all that stuff to the first meeting, and I threw it in a trash can on my way into the meeting. And I haven't found it necessary to use since.
That's right, dear.
But I want to tell you how it's been since I got here. Living the program has changed for me since I got here. And I think it changes for anybody because this is a program of growth and change. Before I go back to how it was when I first got here and what living the program meant for me then, I want to talk about how it was 9 years ago, right around this time. 9 years ago, right around this time, I was lying in my bed in so much pain that if anybody had walked into my room, somebody I knew or a total stranger, with anything that they said would take the pain away, I would have said, to hell with NA, give it to me until I tell you to stop giving it to me. That's the pain I was in. There was nobody there to do that for me, and today I cannot tell you how grateful I am for that. But then, using was right on top of my list of options. And for me, using is always an option. I'm an addict. It's what I do. And I was thinking about that on the way up here, too, that was 9 years ago. And I went through a lot of tough stuff. I've required a major surgery to have that taken care of. And it could have killed me, but it didn't, and I'm grateful for that. But when I got here, living the program was about one thing. It was about not picking up. Everything else was like, okay. All I had energy for when I was new was just to not pick up one day at a time. So if you're new, please don't pick up. The rest of it comes with time. We have a saying in here, time takes time. Some of us get it, whatever it is, faster than others. I'm, like I said before, a very slow learner. But when I first got here, my mind was racing all the time. If I was conscious, I was thinking about 20 different things, and most of them were problems that I couldn't solve that I thought I needed to solve. Whether it was had something to do with world hunger or nuclear proliferation or whatever. You know, these were the things that that bedeviled me when I was new, all the time. And I remember asking a friend of mine, does this ever go away? Does your mind ever stop racing? And she said, yeah, you just come back, you do what you're doing, go to meetings, work the program to the best of your ability, and you'll find that your mind calms down after a while. And I came to understand that this whole concept of my behavior is the first thing that I can change, and my thinking is the last thing that will change. But my behavior, if I change my behavior, sooner or later, my thinking tags along. In my case, it takes a sweet time, but it does. And so when I first got here, when I was awake, my brain was telling me to go get high all the time. It was just telling me, if I wasn't thinking about something else, my brain was telling me to go get high. I would go, you know, I would like take a shower, and then after I was done with that task and my brain didn't have anything else to do, so go get high. So driving was really horrible because, you know, driving is kind of an automatic thing. And all the time I was in the car, my brain saying, go get high, go get high. And it was like giving me directions to the places to go get high. And so I took up this habit. I learned this, I taught myself this behavior that worked for me. I started reading any sign that I saw on the road. Street signs, I remember seeing an advertisement for an apartment that was renting out stuff, store signs, bumper stickers in front of me, anything to keep my mind from obsessing about using, because I just didn't know how you all did this thing about like doing life on life's terms without using drugs. It was big, it was scary, it was foreign to me. I was 34 years old when I got clean, and I have no clue how I got through that long, except my higher power saw fit not to put me in a situation where I could have, well, actually, I spent a lot of time in situations where I could have died. So my higher power just kind of plucked me out, you know, and said, you know, not yet, not yet, not yet. And so I got here and I had no idea. I just had no idea what this was all about. But like I said, trust comes slowly to me too. I came around for a year and a half. And this was kind of my plan, although I didn't recognize it at the time. But this was my plan, and I'm clearer about it now. I'm going to do what you tell me to do, you know, within reason. Because some of the stuff you were asking me to do was crazy. You know? But within reason, I was going to do what you asked me to do. I was going to endeavor to not pick up one day at a time. I was going to go to a meeting every day. Dabble in the steps a little bit, you know. Kind of try them on for size, see, you know. And I figured that after a certain amount of time of doing this, when I didn't get the results that you told me I was going to get, then I was going to go back out and say, well, see, this doesn't work for me. And after about a year and a half of doing it that way and being right on the cusp of doing my fourth step, I was sitting in a meeting and I looked around and I realized that I knew almost everybody in the meeting. And that regardless of where I wanted to belong, this is where I belong. And if I wanted to get anything like a shot at peace and serenity and a life worth living, I needed to keep coming back. So I did. And I love the way this program has worked in my life because they told me, you don't have to worry about working the steps. All you have to do is keep coming back. And the steps will work you. And I thought that was great. Well, I didn't have to do anything. I could not have been more wrong. Because when I had 18 months and I was ready to do my fourth step, I didn't realize that I was ready to do my fourth step. What I realized was I was ready to go back out and use. Because my character defects were like gathered around me like a pack of little chihuahuas. And I could not turn anywhere without them nipping at my ankles. And it was driving me nuts, and I didn't know what to do. But I knew that I couldn't continue to come to meetings feeling that way. So the only other option that I saw, because I'm a brilliant thinker, was to go out and use. And then I had one of these aha moments that I'm so grateful that I have occasionally in recovery. And it was, maybe what you should do is get yourself a new sponsor and do a fourth step. Because I parted ways with my old sponsor. Yeah, sponsoring myself with a year and a half clean. Whew. That was a flash of brilliance. So I got a sponsor. I got a new sponsor, somebody who I was terrified of. I was afraid to ask him to be my sponsor. And he turned out to be a wonderful guy. And we had more in common than I ever would have imagined from just hearing him speak at meetings. He was a musician like me. I didn't know that. His wife and my fiance had the same name. There's this kind of coincidences that I always chalk those up to my higher power sort of nudging me and saying, yeah, uh-huh, that's that way. Go that way. And that's actually one of the reasons I'm here today. I wasn't going to come to the convention because I'm a musician. I'm gifted with the opportunity to perform. I was supposed to perform Saturday night, and it got canceled. And that's another one my higher power just gone, Bill, it's time to go back to the conventions. I haven't been to a convention in years, at least a CPRC convention, because my schedule hasn't allowed it. So I did my fourth step, and then I sat down with my sponsor, and I did my fifth step. My sponsor gave me very specific guidance on how to do the fourth step. I think it's a measure of living the program for me that I was willing to take my sponsor's direction in working the fourth step. Because I'm the guy who likes to have the plan. I don't even care if the plan works. As a matter of fact, it doesn't really matter whether it works. I can stand in the wreckage of my own plan and be proud of the fact that it was my plan. You know, it didn't work. We got that close. We're that close. We're that close. But to have somebody else say to me, you know, we've been doing this stuff for a few decades. that seems to work for hundreds of thousands of people. Maybe it'll work for you too. And so I did the four-step the way my sponsor told me to. And because he was bigger than me and was an ex-Army Ranger, never called him a Green Beret. He said, that's what we wore, not what we were. Okay. He, like I said, he's bigger than me, so if that's what he says, it's okay with me. And I went through this whole process with my four-step, and everybody has their own way of doing the four-step, but I went through this process with my four-step where I wrote all this stuff that he told me to write, and then I took to him like, okay, I'm ready. And he said, now I want you to take what you just wrote, and then he'd make me do stuff with it. And I had to do this three times. And I was starting to get really pissed because I thought I was done with the four-step. But I'm really glad, ultimately, that that's what I did because I got down to, like, the core of what goes on with me. And for me, one of the biggest things I got going on is I'm about status. You know, I want to look good. I want you to, it's not so much that I want you to think I'm great, but I want you to think about me. It's not so much what you think about me. I just want you to think about me. You know? You know, sure, I'd love it if you all loved me, but I'm okay with you guys hating me. You know, as long as I'm in your consciousness somewhere. It's only when you're not thinking about me at all that it hurts. That's when it hurts. So part of living the program is getting used to being like right-sized, you know. And I said in a meeting last night that I was asked to lead at the last minute, which seems to happen a lot to me. I must be like the pinch hitter guy. But I said last night that I wasn't public enemy anything. And I'm also not God's gift to anything, but I thought about that on the way up here, and that's not true. I'm God's gift to myself. That's the one thing I am, is God's gift to myself. So what am I going to do with that? What am I going to do with what my higher power gave me? And for me, the process of living the program is coming to an awareness of, if I'm an instrument of my higher power's will, and he has equipped me with the tools I need to do whatever it is he has planned for me, my job is to try to be aware of what that is. And that's all 11th step stuff for me. After I did my fifth step, my sponsor made another tactical error. At least I thought it was a tactical error. He said, if you're like most addicts, you're going to take 6 and 7? Any kids here? And you're going to fuck around with them for 2 years or so. And I said, wow. You know, I got a free ticket again. It's like, you know, you don't have to work the steps. I don't have to do anything with 6 and 7. I can hang out for two years before I have to do anything. Wrong. What he meant was I was going to try every way I could possibly do to make the 6 and 7 step what I wanted them to be instead of what they were. And I was going to invite an incredible amount of emotional and spiritual pain on myself as a result. It's a whole new level of surrender when I start asking my higher power to take it all of it. You know? Even the stuff I like. Because I recognize the fact that the stuff I like, even though I like the way it feels, it's killing me spiritually. Oh. See, this is a real kicker for me. That's really, really hard for me. I remember I went through this one tremendous thing with lust. And after lust, it was greed. And after greed, it was gluttony. And it's all still there. But my experience with this part of recovery is that it's not as intense, doesn't happen as often, and it doesn't last as long. And that's the relief that I'm getting. I'm still a human being. I'm not going to be perfect. I don't care how much I work the steps. I'm not going to be perfect, but I'm a work in progress. That's a real key part of living the program for me, is understanding that I'm a work in progress. There are two parts to that statement. Progress, and work. The work's the part that I don't want to do. Progress, I'm okay with. Work, you know, not so much. And that's what I've come to understand. And understanding that I'm a work in progress brings me to a place where I can be like that guy I heard in my first meeting. I can look myself in the mirror and say, I love myself. I don't always love everything I do. Certainly don't love everything I think. But I recognize the fact that I'm a work in progress. And I deserve to be here, because if I didn't, I wouldn't be here. And as long as I'm willing to do the work, I will progress. And it's a real relief to not have to be perfect and to not have to hide, you know, my warts, my imperfections. And it's a real relief to be able to love myself right there. Yeah. Right there. It's like, it's not, I don't love the person that I'm hoping I'm going to become. I love the person I am right now, with the understanding that I still have work to do. I want to make sure that I don't leave Paul twisting in the wind. I told him at the beginning, I said, the problem with asking me to do first is I'm going to talk for 20 minutes, and then you're going to have to figure out what to do with the rest of the time. So, I know, Paul. I know. So that brought me to the eighth step, and this is all what living the program is for me, is incorporating the steps into my life on a daily basis. So on the eighth step, I made a list of people I had harmed. Now, I went to my sponsor. Again, see, I don't want to do the work. So I went to my sponsor, and I said, who should be on my eighth step list? He said, how the hell would I know who's supposed to be on your eighth step list? It's your life. You figure it out. I thought, wow, that's not very helpful. You know, I thought sponsors were supposed to help me with that stuff. But that's exactly what I needed, because I have always been the kind of person, I'll let you do my work for me if you're willing. If you're willing, I'll let you do it. In fact, when I went to do my nine-step amends with my former employer, my sponsor and another person who was one of my spiritual advisors both said the same thing. I spoke to them at different times, and they both said the same thing. I told them, this is how I'm thinking about approaching this ninth step. And they both said, that's good, except you can't tell him you're an addict in recovery. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? And the reason was, is because I'm looking for a gimme. I'm looking for a way out. Yeah. You know, I'm looking for a way to abdicate responsibility. And it's like, yeah, I did all this stuff, but I'm a recovering addict. Oh, well, that's okay then. So I did all this stuff, and I want you to know I did all this stuff, and I want to know what we need to do to try to make it right. Another thing about that particular ninth step, and for the people who've heard me talk about this before, I apologize, but these are the things that make my recovery real for me. I thought the whole time before I went to do that ninth step that this man was either going to say, you stay right here, I'm calling the cops. Or he was going to say, the place hasn't been the same since you left. We want you back at twice your salary. Because that's the way my brain is. This is what I got from a guy who'd owned a company for over 30 years and had probably thousands of employees in that time. First, he told me about some really bad employees. Like, I didn't even come close to these guys. And then he said, this was his assessment of my performance and my job when I worked for him. You were kind of cranky about stuff sometimes, but you got the job done. It's like, wow, that's sort of like middle of the road. That's sort of average. Well, you know what? I'm sort of middle of the road, and I'm sort of average. And I'm not all that. And compared to a lot of other employees he's had, he was kind of bemused why I was there in the first place. But they say the ninth step is for us, so. And it did do wonders for me to have the courage to walk through that. The tenth step is something that I do on a regular basis. I don't really write it down, but I find myself reflecting. I can't believe it, I'm using up all my time. I find myself reflecting on what I've done during the day, things that I thought I did well, or things that I thought I maybe did differently than the last time, even if I didn't get good results, because they told me in here that I need to take some different kinds of risks and maybe make some new mistakes, which is still far superior to making the same old mistakes. So my 10th step has a lot to do with that sort of reflection on the day. And I know I'm in a good space when I can reflect on, say, some success I had in the day and be grateful to my higher power for it, instead of like reaching over trying to pat myself on the back because I'm such a wonderful guy. Because I'm not such a wonderful guy. I'm not such a horrible guy either. But my higher power gave me talents and abilities, and when I use them to good purpose, I feel like I'm doing my higher power's will. Again, that's what living the program means to me. I started praying and meditating, even though I said when I got here that I was not about that stuff. I started praying and meditating. I don't even know when it happened or why it happened, but I do it every morning. I've been doing it for years. And the 12th step really is the crux of the biscuit for living the program, because of what it says is, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to addicts, which I try to do, because I believe anybody can get clean and stay clean and find a new way to live. And it says that in our literature. That's what you can do. You can get clean, stay clean, and find a new way to live. The new way that I found to live is far superior to anything I ever did. My biggest problem today is that I got to find new dreams, because all the ones I had when I got here, I've lived. Some of them more than once. And that's the truth. This is what the program has given to me. And practice these principles in all our affairs. I got to tell you, that's a tough one. That's a tall order. There's a lot of stuff that I'm not ready to give over to my higher power. A lot of stuff I'm not feeling all that humble about. It's like, God, you can have all this stuff, but these things over here, I got them, no problem. You know, I'm gonna work this stuff. You can have the rest of it. And whenever I'm doing that, I'm separating myself from my higher power, and I'm also usually just creating more problems for myself because I don't have the answers. And on a daily basis, I go back to that first thing, the most important thing, the thing that allows me to attempt to live the program to the best of my ability on any given day, and that is, don't pick up, no matter what. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Bill. I'm an addict named Janice.
I'm Janice.
And Paul M. is getting ready to share on living the program as well.
Prime addict, my name is Paul. My clean date's April the 14th, 1990. Yay. I had 6,574 days in a row without using.
All right.
I got 6,500. Y'all keep clapping. I'm going to roll for a long time with this one. Y'all know where I'm at. This is the program right here. I got 6,574 days without walking from long distances with dried up dookie on me and my armpits hurting. I got 6,574 days without hurting and harming and robbing my family and walking in the middle of the night looking for something that I cannot find from a great distance where I was never at. I got 6,574 days from not wearing some little man's shoes and my wife's sweater in the dead of winter walking, talking about, I just need one more. I got 6,574 days where I made the decision oftentimes enough never to quit. When I knew I had nothing else to do. 6,574 days where God surrendered my spirit, my life, in a way that I could never have imagined. I got 6,500 days working on liking white people. I got 6,574 days on working on liking black people. I got 6,574 days for working on liking fat people. I got 6,574 days. Without hating on them other people. People that's not as attractive as I am. I got 6,574 days where I have not slept with nobody in my family. I have not slept with any of my men friends' wife, any of my girlfriends' wives. I got 6,574 days where I have not actually wanted to just walk up and shoot somebody and walk away with it. I got 6,574 days in a program that in the beginning I couldn't stand. And I ain't there no more. I'm going to take one of my shirts off. Because I want to be bright. You know, because what's happening is like... I got 6,574 days in a process that says that no matter who you are, no matter what you are, no matter what about who or what you are, no matter if you gay, white, black, no matter what you have done, I got 6,574 days that says you belong here regardless, that you are just right for this program, no matter how many times you said you was going to stop and you didn't. No matter how many times you left your children, no matter how many times you left your family, you can do this. You can do this. I got 6,574 days without duking on myself behind something, you know, and wiping myself with my underwear and walking around for 4 more days. What's up, dog? I got 6,574 days where I had to talk to someone else that had more of my well-being than I had for myself. That's called this atmosphere. See, this atmosphere is structured for people like me. I don't know about you, but everything that has happened to me in my life has changed as a direct result of this atmosphere called Narcotics Anonymous. I'm not talking about playing basketball, football, having great sex, or none of that. I ain't talking about no money or none of that. I'm talking about something inside changes my thinking. It changes the way I want to be touched. It changes the boundaries in which I will allow you to touch me. I have been raped by gay people. I have been beat. I have hurt people. I am not really a nice person. But I got 6,574 days and I'm working. Right? Because see, what the deal is this. When you come into a process that says that you must accept the fact that your powerlessness comes from one inability. You lack the ability to be honest. You funky motherfucker. Seriously. How can you get help if you don't want to recognize that not only are you powerless, but your life is unmanageable? That physically that you keep doing something to you that keeps harming you, that mentally that you keep thinking about what would I do if I don't get it, and if I can't get it one more time, what's going to happen to me? How many times spiritually that I said, please don't let me do this to my my mama, my sister. Don't let me do this to my family. Please let me be able to make it to my job. Please let me be able to make it to the graduation. Please let me be able to sing in the choir. Please let me be able to walk in the store without stealing. Please let me not drop my gun in front of the police. Please. How many times can you come into a process where you're forced to find something greater in order to achieve surrender? How many times can you find something? Because see, when you get hit on the football field, you just get up and take it. If you can get it, go on back where you're going. But in here, you can keep using till one day the hit is in. Right? That's the one. Right? That's the one. Because what happened is that I never could find it again. And then I got trapped. Stuck. In the grip. Trapped in a place where nobody could find me, not even because of my age, because I was black. Oh, I'm talking about losing everything. I'm talking about losing your mama house. I'm talking about people saying to me, what happened to him? I'm talking about when you give a family member the clap and everybody in your family know you did it. I'm talking about ruining your brother's relationship for a lifetime. I'm talking about taking the money out of the church that belonged to your grandfather. I'm talking about ruthless stealing to people spiritually that love you. So when they said I was going to burn, I knew what was up. I had to find something that was greater than that too to stay here. Because you can't, what lie can you tell your mother that you're 20 years old and you had your hands tied and wired to a piece of oak in a roach-infested hotel on a drug strip, that you had your ankle strapped down, that they beat you with a pistol, broke your ribs, cracked your ass, split your nose? So what do you tell people? Where do you go to get help for nightmares, for leaving people, for being harmed? Where do you go for choking your brother, knowing that he is getting ready to die, choking him? Where do you go? I ain't talking about robbing no liquor store. I'm talking about killing my family. I ain't talking about that. Where do you go? So you go to the literature. I know that's right. The only antidote to the disease of addiction is honest sharing. So come on with me. Yeah, ooh, she felt that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do this in 15 minutes or less. One of the first things we learn in Narcotics Anonymous is that if we use, we lose. By the same token, we won't experience as much pain if we avoid the things that cause the pain. Continuing to take a personal inventory means that we form